give you the news. Trinity Info, we gave you the clues. Owners' profits were always sky high. Change in market now threatens our lives. Post-literation, critical reading, dumbed down nation.
Hey everybody, welcome to Navel Gazing, the Valley Indie Podcast. My name is Eugene Driscoll. The Great Give is coming up May 5th and May 6th. It's your opportunity to support the Valley Indie and a whole bunch of other nonprofits in the area. If you want to donate in advance, go to donate.valleyindie.org. As my phone goes off, my guest today is Mr. Jim Gilday. You know him locally from his service for many years on the Derby Board of Education, but he's also the chairman of the Commuter Rail Council, and we're going to be talking about, those are text alerts for some ambulance service going on, but we're going to be talking about a rail service and something that happened or didn't happen at a bond commission meeting April 16th. So I'll shut up. My wife tells me I talk too much on these podcasts and I'm boring. Mr. Gilday, welcome to the podcast.
Wow, that's a tough critic right there, Gene. Hi, how are you?
I'm doing all right. I think it must be the, I'll blame it on quarantine, I guess, to make myself feel better. Yeah, she told me it was a video podcast I did with the Southern student like a week ago. She's like, you didn't stop talking for 10 minutes in anyway. But like we have something serious to talk about here. I was trying to catch up before I called you. But I mean, there was this bond commission meeting yesterday, the 16th. We're recording this on the 17th. And I know, spoiler alert, you had found out the night before that something was supposed to be on the agenda was not. But explain to the listeners, ideally, what did you think was going to happen at that bond commission meeting?
So we had discussions and it had been communicated publicly, not only a Connecticut Commuter Rail Council, but I also believe to many of the legislators along the Waterbury corridor, that at the bond commission meeting, that the original order for 60 rail cars that were going to go to the Shoreline East and Harper Line was going to be increased to 72 cars, and that there would be a 12 car purchase for the Waterbury line. That would be really designed to take advantage of the additional service that the passing siding project would allow. So that was what was communicated. That was certainly the expectation. There was a lot of advocacy that went behind this. There was a lot of excitement along the branch. And so that's where we kind of thought the day was going.
And in terms of had this happened, what would it have meant for the Waterbury line? And I guess the Danbury line, I should say, is also impacted by this. But what would it have meant for us in the Naugatuck Valley?
So those additional trains, so when the passing sidings are going to come in, and for those of us on the Waterbury branch know that, you know, for the most part, trains come every two and a half hours. Doesn't matter if it's peak, doesn't matter if it's off peak. You know, that's pretty much what the train schedule is. So once these four passing sidings were going to come in, the additional cars would really help double that service, really, to where you could almost have half hour, where you could have half hour peak service and hourly off peak service. And again, you got to put yourself in the mind of, you know, once life goes back to normal and what it had been like before, what that really meant, not only for commuters, and that's such a small part of it, not only for the commuters on the branch, but just the economic springboard that would be for the Waterburys, the Beacon Falls, the Naugatucks, the Ansonias, the Seymours, and the Derbys, to really now have that be a linchpin for your downtown, to know that people who wanted to come in and develop in your downtown could plan on consistent half-hour off-peak service and half-hour peak service and 1 hour off-peak service. That was really probably the benefit of it as well.
And to your point about this acting potentially as a springboard for development, one of the things we hear all the time is transportation-oriented development. You hear it in the Valley. There are developers who want to put apartments around all the train stations in some of the communities you just mentioned, Ansonia, Derby specifically. But the only real transportation you have while the rail line is there, it's really Route 8 is what's moving people back and forth, and it's congested and all that good stuff. So then what happened? I guess we should rewind to the night before the bond commission meeting. From what I understand, somehow it gets out that the rail cars and the money for the rail cars is not going to be on the bond commission agenda. How did that happen?
So the meeting on Wednesday was geared towards Shoreline East. Had it been, had we been living in you know, normal times, so to speak, this would have been a Shoreline East meeting. We would have been up in Guilford. Amtrak would have been in attendance, which they were, but it was, so it was still a meeting geared towards the Shoreline East.
Let me interrupt you. When you say, I'm sorry, Jim, when you say there was a meeting, what was the meeting Wednesday?
Wednesday was a Zoom meeting. It had planned to be a real, you know, an in-person meeting in Guilford.
Of the commuter, so of the commuter the, rail council?
Yes, sir.
Okay,
yes,
sorry. Sir. Go ahead. Go ahead.
No, all good. So it was still a meeting of the Connecticut Commuter Rail Council. It was held via Zoom, and it was still focused on the Shoreline East. One of the topic items is rail car procurement process. And so as they went through the Shoreline East and the Hartford line, they mentioned the bond commission and how the following day that it would no longer be 72 cars, but there was only going to be now a 60-car purchase. And that really resonated for those of us on the council who for months have been hearing that that there was going to be a car purchase for Waterbury. So again, you know, certainly you reach out to the people that you're working with, you know, you reach out to, you know, legislators, you reach out to mayor's offices and you come and find out nobody knew. And which is really the, which is really a curious and interesting part is that, it was really with little notice. And as we started to talk to our advocates and our legislators along the line, when I tell you no one knew. It was fascinating how this significant change to the Waterbury branch line was almost going to, you know, come in under the wire, you know, like the Cleveland Browns moving to Baltimore all over again. It was a very quiet hush-hush.
And so then the commission meets the next day, and when it comes to that point in the agenda, there is, you know, it's as bureaucratic as you can get in turn. You know, here's the agenda item, and somebody reads it. I have a clip. It's a long clip, but maybe I'll just play a little bit of it.
Okay.
This is when this topic came up, and it's to give money for cars not on the Waterbury line. Essentially, I'm doing a terrible way of a terrible explanation, but here we go. Let's see if I can get this to work.
Who's that, please?
Chris Davis.
Hey, Chris.
Right. So to clarify the Secretary's statement that it's still $300 million that would be included here despite the removal of some of these other lines?
Through you, Governor, yes, that is correct.
And through you, Governor, would it still be a procurement of 72 rail coaches just for the Shoreline East and Hartford line?
The correction to the agenda should reflect procurement of 60 rail coaches for Shoreline East and Hartford, and the $300 million reflects the cost to do so.
So what happened in the last week since this agenda had been put out that there would be a reevaluation of revenues as stated by the Secretary to now remove the purchase of these rail cars for Danbury and Water Branch lines?
Through you, Governor, the agenda was incorrect when it was originally posted. It should have always stated procurement of 60 rail coaches for Shoreline East and the Hartford line. So that was an error on our part.
So, Jim, the explanation that we hear there, and that was Melissa McCaw, who is the Secretary of the Office. What is she the Secretary of, actually? I'm not even sure.
State
Budget Director. Okay. So it sounded like, if I'm hearing that correctly, the explanation here was that Waterbury and Danbury branches weren't supposed to get the money, and we accidentally put that on an agenda, and then caught it the night before. Is that what I just heard?
I think that's how I took what she was saying to mean. But you know, I don't think any reasonable person along the Waterbury branch who had been had their head out of the sand for the last 2 months. Think that makes sense, because it's been communicated too widely out there. You know, I mean, it was mentioned at a very public council meeting. It was discussed amongst many of the council of governments. So certainly doesn't pass the smell test. I don't think anyone. I think most people would agree with that.
And then I'm reading some of, this is coverage from the Republican American, a story by Paul Hughes and Andrew Larson, published either today or yesterday, I'm not sure. And the lead is, the state can't afford to buy new rail cars for the Waterbury and Danbury branches of Metro North Railroad, according to Governor Ned Lamont. Instead, the Waterbury and Danbury lines likely will have to wait years for the needed rail cars, while the state replaces the fleets for the Hartford Line and Shoreline East. I mean, there was a flurry of press releases. Republicans criticized Lamont from withholding Waterbury rail line money in bond commission. That's the title. House Republican leader Themis Claridis and House ranking member of the bond commission, State Rep Chris Davis, who I believe was on that was the voice we heard asking questions, expressed their displeasure at the panel's decision not to include the Waterbury line in the funding. Quote, given all that is going on with the pandemic, this was an ill-conceived decision that once again raises the specter of tolls, the Republicans said. This should not be about politics. It's about public safety and the economic advancement of our state. Waterbury Rail Caucus, which is a bipartisan group of lawmakers representing the Naugatuck Valley, they issued a statement. The elimination of Waterbury rail funding from the statewide DOT package is a severe negative impact to the economic viability of a transit corridor affecting approximately 250,000 citizens, and it flies in the face of rebuilding Connecticut's economy as we move beyond the COVID crisis. Kara Rochelle is a Democrat. She represents... she's a state rep, and she represents Derby and Ansonia. She issued a statement on Facebook. I'll read part of it. The removal of the Waterbury train line cars from the transportation package at today's bond commission meeting is frustrating and extremely disappointing to me. She points out later on, developers have indicated they're not only interested but also ready to invest, and they have been waiting on action to upgrade the Waterbury line. She concludes, that is why today's action is short-sighted and leaves me flabbergasted. While our region faced a setback today, I'm working with my colleagues on the bipartisan Waterbury Train Caucus to advocate on the issue, and will continue to fight hard for these rail cars. And then just finally, there's one last one. This one is from Christopher Bowen, who is a Democratic member of the Seymour Board of Selectmen. So we've had state reaction, and then on the very local level, Bowen says in part, we are not pawns to be sacrificed, we meaning the Naugatuck Valley, are not pawns to be sacrificed in a game being played by people from Hartford, from Fairfield and Hartford County, who seem to view our area as a bunch of benighted rubes who don't deserve basic and promised services because most of our representatives are from the quote unquote wrong party. So there seems to be this feeling out there that really what happened was this is retribution for the lack of support for tolls in the area. Do you think there's any? What's your opinion on that? I mean, you're well versed in transportation issues and know the issues much more than I do. What do you think's going on here?
I think it probably goes a little deeper than that. I mean, for certain, I think there's a point being made that until we have revenue, you know, things like this aren't going to happen. But it doesn't change the fact that the Hartford Line is getting cars and the Shoreline East is getting cars. And listen, no one on the Shoreline East was raising a flag to have tolls either, truthfully. But when you start to couple this and you tie this and then you look at what happened with the fire school, you start to get that there's probably a bigger issue than just tolls. I mean, it's probably payback to the region in general for probably, you know, some of our legislators, maybe in the wrong party, they may be more vocal. So I do think that the electorate as a whole and the average Valley person or the average Naugatuck Valley region person does get hurt because there's a larger political issue at play. It's bigger than tolls. It's just, it's politics in general. And if it was bigger than tolls, we'd have the fire school by now. You know, so it's just a continual hammering of this, of the folks in this region and the voters in this region, because there's a few people who are up in Hartford that don't get along with the administration. And it's, then, it's nothing more difficult. There's nothing more complicated than that.
And I should apologize because Melissa McCall is the budget chief of the state of Connecticut, and I didn't mean earlier to dismiss her or her position. And here is Melissa McCall talking again at yesterday's bond commission meeting a little more about why the Waterbury and Danbury branches are not getting new rail cars.
Through you, Governor, the $300 million reflects a reduction in the total amount that would have been needed if we were procuring 72 cars. So the number was reduced and the text was not updated. Commissioner Gilletti, do you wish to expound further?
Yeah, I would have just said that for the 72 cars, it was going to be $360 million. You can use a rough back of the envelope, about $5 million a car, and you can figure it out, and that's why it was reduced from the 360 to $300 million.
So right now, the argument is that there is not the $60 million available for Danbury and Waterbury branch lines, or is it just a policy decision by OPM not to move forward with that purchase at this time?
There is not $60 million available. And as we've all learned throughout this process of considering a transportation plan, we're underfunded with regards to state of good repair. So the department obviously is going to focus on maintenance, and the extent to which they can fund some enhancement, will continue to do so. So this is primarily a financial challenge, and one that we will obviously continue to discuss in the years to come.
And I should also add that I reached out to Governor Lamont's office for comment, and a spokesman for the governor actually referred me to yesterday's bond commission meeting, and specifically the comments that were made by the budget chief for the state of Connecticut, Melissa McCall. So, Jim, I'm curious. I mean, Ansonia is on the top of the list, at least in 2019, of the most economically distressed cities in Connecticut. Derby is one of the most economically distressed municipalities in the state of Connecticut. I don't know what's going to happen to the downtown in Derby, downtown plans, businesses, restaurants that have become the backbone of Ansonia's resurgence are hurting, obviously. Unemployment is skyrocketing here and all over the nation. But Ansonia and Derby specifically have still been trying to recover, not just from the recession, but from the loss of manufacturing jobs decades ago. So, and there is that, you know, there's that stereotype that the state just sort of, this is the flyover land. You know, the Rust Belt of Connecticut is the flyover for state government, it seems. Where do we go from here?
I'll say, if I could just say two things before I address that. No one really believes in this corridor that it's a money issue. Listen, they just spent the same commission, they authorized $60 million, right, for Windsor Lock Station, right? They continue to pump millions upon millions of dollars into the Hartford line for new stations. No one really believes that it's a finance issue. If they want to find the money like they did for Windsor Locks, they can. It's almost insulting to hear that get mentioned, because again, people find money for the things they consider to be a priority, period.
And Jim, okay, we're talking $60 million they're claiming they don't have, right? Six zero. Is that right?
Right. Which is the same. Yep. Yes, sir. Which is the same exact money they're spending on the Windsor Lock Station. Right. And so again, no one really, and that's where, you know, politicians, that's why people don't believe politicians. Right. So when you hear Melissa McGraw say, talk about, oh, we don't have the money. Oh, but hey, we're going to spend $60 million, you know, Windsor Locks. People shake their head and a person like that loses all credibility. And so when a person like that says, oh, we made an agenda issue, people shake their head and you lose credibility. That's how politicians lose credibility. So the, the, the money thing is just a joke, you know, to hear that comment. When you look at the context of the money and you look at the fact that they're pumping that kind of money into Windsor Lock Station, it's a joke. So now you go back to here's the problem, though, right? And here, so our politicians and our legislators along the line, you know, the mayors and the legislators, so they have to walk this really careful line, right? Because if they say too much, then they're going to sacrifice grant money in other areas. And so that's, it gets to be a catch 22, right? Mm-hmm. So the politicians can't complain about the rail lines because then they're going to lose grant money for other things. And so we really just need, where do we go from here? We really need our legislators and our mayors, the big city mayors, to say, you know what? We're not taking this. We're pushing forward. They got to remember this, certainly during election time, because guess what? All these people are going to come back around and when it's election time, and they're all going to want support. And so you just got to be careful where you lay that support out and who you work for, because there's been countless broken promises to this region along the line. And until we decide to have a backbone, until we decide to stand up and not, you know, put out these, you know, not fancy little statements that are just, you know, that jab instead of knockout, you know, we're going to continue to get pushed around. So that's one area that we go. We have to, as a region, exercise our legislative might, exercise our political strength, especially when it comes around election time, and not allow ourselves to be pushed around. And I will tell you, until this, the legislative branch of this region stands up and they start withholding votes and they start withholding support that are important to other people, we're going to continue to get pushed around, and that's just a fact. I think we have to, as far as transportation, we have to pull ourselves up. We have to continue the fight. We have to continue to advocate. Because, as you mentioned, Derby, Ansonia, Waterbury, these are severely distressed communities that need the economic lift that the branch line, a functioning branch line, would give them.
Yeah. Do you think, do the people making these decisions, I mean, I guess I'll put it at Governor Lamont's door, do they realize how much it's needed in Ansonia and Derby? I mean, you know, for 11 years, they do. Okay.
They do, but they just say, but, you know, listen, so it's all a political game, right? They want their tolls and the end justify the means. And there's some folks there that are vocal against them. And it's a very calculated decision of, you know, we're going to push back until, you know, some of the folks along that branch, whether they support tolls or whether they be less vocal, or, you know, perhaps they hope that some of the people along the branch, some of the legislators along the branch lose. So as long as they can, you know, listen, this is no big surprise. This happens at a local level. It happens at a federal, at the state level. It happens at a national level. Politicians, they allow their partisanship to get in the way of what's good for people. And so, yeah, you know, do I think that they get that there's an issue in the Waterbury branch area? Absolutely. But do I think that they feel that by withholding services, it'll hurt some of the politicians along the line and maybe they'll lose in the next election? Sure. I think that's exactly how the game gets played. And unfortunately, you know, neither party along our branch plays nice together. And they've never acted as a cohesive body. And until we get a cohesive body along this corridor, we're going to continue to get pushed on.
And do you think maybe... local Republicans could have, or state Republicans could have maybe worked more on the toll situation. I mean, I grew up in New York. Tolls were, a thing of daily life. Although, man, did they get more and more expensive, almost comically expensive. But, I mean, will tolls be revisited in some way? Are the Republicans going to have to give something?
This isn't just a payback to Themis, Nicole, and George Logan. I mean, this is Themis. This is payback to Joan Hartley and to Kara. I mean, for Rochelle, for anyone who didn't support a toll, they're smart enough to get that. I mean, this is payback for everyone along the branch who didn't support tolls. This is just not, hey, we're gonna penalize Themis, Nicole, and George. This is, hey, we're gonna penalize Themis, George, Nicole, Joan, Kara. I mean, this is shrapnel for everybody. I mean, that's what this is all about. This is not political. They're dropping the bomb for every legislator, Republican or Democrat, in this region. And the interesting part will be to see how they respond in a year and a half when it's election time.
And in terms of the Waterbury line and the advances that were have been made or are in progress or have been promised, how much this, in terms, I mean, the Waterbury branch, I'm sorry as I'm, you know, having terrible time getting this question out, but the Waterbury branch, it's the outhouse on wheels, you know, it's the line that everyone, nobody pays attention to. In terms of the constant, it's cursed. In terms of the constant setbacks, how does this setback rank in terms of all the bad things that have happened on the branch line over the years?
You know, this was probably as devastating news for the branch as I've heard in a long time. I mean, we lost an express train probably in 2013, and this is that times five. You know, it's pretty bad. You know, it's probably the most disappointed I've been about something on the Waterbury line. Again, going back to the Lost Service weekend, Lost Express. In 2012, 2013.
And are there any upcoming, I mean, everything's on hold in terms of public meetings because of the pandemic, but the next commuter rail council meeting, is this going to come up in any way? Do you envision?
Well, the August council meeting, I'm sorry, I interrupted you, Gene. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I talk too much. Go ahead.
No, it will be a topic of discussion, rail procurement. I feel bad because, you know, certainly, you know, we enjoy a strong relationship with the Department of Transportation and, you know, they're train advocates, right? So they would put, they would buy new trains for everything if you want. And so they're in a tough spot, right? Because ultimately they report to the governor's office. And so they're in a tough spot. So my guess is they're not going to be as open as we would like moving ahead on discussions like this, because this was such a vocal out there discussion for the last 2 days. We do have an August meeting along the line. But at the end of the day, you know, until the average voter really you know, stands up and starts, you know, making changes and starts remembering things like the fire school and remembers things like the Waterbury branch line, broken promises, until the rubber meets the road and people start, you know, translating those disappointments into election day votes, you know, we'll continue to get pushed on as well.
All right, Mr.
So our job in the our job and the legislator's job is to remind people of that.
Yeah, I'll just, before I let you go, was that the last thing you wanted to, any points you wanted to make that I haven't asked you on this Friday where I seem to have trouble forming a sentence?
No, I think the most important thing is that we have to rise up, we have to dust ourselves off, we have to not be worried about, you know, ramifications for fighting or pushing back and taking on City Hall. I think that's the most important thing for all the commuters and certainly all the legislators, whether you're a local leader or a state legislator.
All right, Jim, thanks for taking a half hour of your time today. Have a great weekend.
Thanks,
my best to you and your family.
You too, Gene. Stay safe.
Bye-bye. All right, so that was Jim Gilday, Derby Board of Ed, very local in everything Derby, and the chairman of the CT Commuter Rail Council. And for valleyindy.org, this is Eugene Driscoll. I apologize for some of my stumbling and awkwardness, but hey, that's life. Talk to you soon.
For hundreds of years, we've brought you the news. Gave you the clues. Owners' profits were always sky high. Changing market now threatens our lives.